The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Radio at KCNR. Welcome. You can jump in and join the chat room by going to wethepeopleradio.us. We're a two-hour show from 8 to 10 a.m. We focus on fiscal responsibility, limited government, and adherence to the Constitution and any issue that falls under that umbrella. So good morning to Bob, our great sound guy who knows 70s music. We love that. And good morning, Aaron.
Hello. And we've roped in yet one more time our good friend Fred Kelly Grant, the
good
man
morning.
With three names.
Good morning.
And Sean
morning.
From Alturas, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Okay, now we have to add a caveat. It's really afternoon. It's really Tuesday, so don't call us. We're not really here.
Okay, and you've been warned.
It's the last time we're going to tell you. All right, so you have been on a tour of Northern California, whirlwind, I guess you might say.
The California adventure.
Oh, man.
I spent the week in Siskiyou County, and then I've been here for, I guess, 2 days. I've lost track.
It felt like three or four, I know.
And then tonight I leave for Del Norte County, and then over to Grants Pass for conferences for the California and Oregon sheriffs, and for Southern Oregon and Northern California people on coordination and how the process works for local government.
And, you know, before we started the show, Mr. Grant has been with us many times, not only attending our Tea Party meetings on Monday nights when he's in town, but also on this radio show. So a lot of our listeners already know Mr. Grant's history and what brought him to the place of becoming the father of coordination, which he will explain to our listeners. But first, if you can give us a little bio about your history, because it's pretty impressive.
It's colorful.
And colorful.
Well,
include the colorful part. I like that part.
It's more colorful than I would like at some points. I was born in South Carolina, and so I'm a Southerner. And even though I haven't been back there in 35 years, I'm a Southerner.
Hmm.
I have a sign on my wall that says American by birth and Southern by the grace of God. I went to the College of Idaho, went to school in Idaho. My mother married my stepfather when I was five, and she loved the man dearly to leave South Carolina for the desert of Idaho. I went to College of Idaho. I majored in constitutional history and law. Not by choice, but because apparently, as I later found out, the directors of the history department, political science, and English departments decided on my entry exams that I was going to be their candidate for an honor scholarship to the University of Chicago. So they manipulated me through this. At any rate, I went to the University of Chicago Law School, graduated, went to work for Lord Bissell and Brook in Chicago, which was the firm that represented Lloyd's of London in this country. And from there went to Maryland, where I was clerk to the chief judge of the Maryland Court of Appeals, and then an assistant United States attorney, where probably my favorite moment was representing Robert Kennedy in court in a habeas corpus petition filed by Jimmy Hoffa, challenging the conviction that he got.
I didn't know that.
And was amazed, quite amazed, that Robert Kennedy was so short. to me, he was a giant. And then I went across the street to the state's attorney's office in Baltimore and became chief of the organized crime division, one of the first organized crime divisions that were set up under federal law, under federal funding for the cities and states. I did that for a good number of years, and then I left and started defending the people that I had tried to put away. When my oldest son was ready to start to school, my wife, for the first time in our lives, decided she was going to dictate what we did, and she said, "We're going home." She wanted Andrew to start to school in Idaho. And so we came back to the desert. I was counsel to two governors, Governor Cecil Andrus, Governor John Evans. Andrus went on to become Secretary of Interior under President Carter. Then I went off and headed up the research division for the 3rd Judicial District Courts in Idaho, finally went back into criminal law and represented death penalty cases for the public defender in Canyon County, and 20 years ago got to what I'm doing now. So,
you know, I've heard your resume so many times, I never get tired of hearing it.
I don't either, but who was a gangster when you were in the organized crime thing?
Who was the gangster?
Yeah, who were like the big gangsters of that time?
Well,
I'm a little weak on my gangsters.
In Baltimore, Baltimore did not have one of the main families of the syndicate. In Baltimore, our main gangsters were Big Head Brother and Little Melvin and Big
I
James,
love the names.
And Big James Westfall.
They're big or they're little.
Exactly.
And Big Lucille, who was around, imagine, 475 pounds.
Wow.
And that's an interesting story about her in my book.
And the name of the book is?
Justice My Ass.
All right.
Exclamation point.
Which is what I think of the criminal justice system. In New York, the big names were Joey Accardo, in Chicago, I mean, Joey Accardo. And, of course, in New York, the usual names, the Gottis at that time had started to come forward. But a deal had been made many years before in the District of Columbia between the Afro-American gangs and the syndicate. And the syndicate agreed that they would leave D.C. alone, and the Afro-American gangs agreed that they would leave New York City alone. Hmm. And so they made a truce because there had been a bitter battle there with a lot of murders. And so Baltimore was kind of left in between. And so we really didn't have the white syndicate in Baltimore was gambling oriented. And probably the top criminal in that area was Marvin Mandel, who later became governor.
Ouch.
And then was indicted and served a prison term, as did his predecessor in the governor's office. And as did his successor, Spiro Agnew, in the governor's office.
Oh, my gosh. Wow.
So it was an interesting time.
Just goes to show you shouldn't just necessarily vote for the person because their name is familiar.
No.
Well, Spiro Agnew is the greatest story politically that I think I've ever come across. You know, he was a committing magistrate, which is a justice of the peace, and he got a little more money because he was one of the ones that you could bring a defendant before, and he decided whether to release him on bail. Well, he lost that position, and so he went to work as a, I believe, a hearing examiner, or he was on the planning commission or something for Baltimore County. There was a change in the executive board in Baltimore County, and he wasn't reappointed. And so it made him mad, and he ran for county executive in Baltimore County and had no chance at all because he was Republican. It was a Democratic county. But about 2 weeks before the election, a big scandal hit against the incumbent, and it caused Agnew to get in. So, and he was one of the poorest county executives in the history of Baltimore County. Along came the governor's race, and he decided he was going to run for governor. The Democrats, of course, outnumbered the Republicans 2-1. But a strange thing happened. Redistricting occurred, which you folks know something about right now. And a man by the name of Carlton Sickles, who had been in the House of Representatives, lost his district. Now, always the deal had been in Maryland that the Attorney General was the nominee for governor. But this time, Sickles wanted to fight. He wanted the position. He didn't want to lose his political job. So he and Thomas Finan were running against each other. And then there was a white supremacist from the Eastern Shore named George Mahoney, who decided he'd get in the race. The two regular Democrats split the vote. The white supremacist got the nomination. Of course, Agnew became president.
Yeah.
I mean, became governor. And then Nixon had to pick a Southern governor. And he thought that the reaction that Agnew had had to the riots in Baltimore following Martin Luther King's execution, where he blamed the black leaders for the riots, he felt that it made him a strong Southern governor, so he named him as his vice president. What he didn't know is the day after he blamed the black leaders, he called them all back in and apologized to them.
Gosh, that sounds kind of like politics to me.
Oh,
and on that happy note, we're going to thank our advertisers. We'll be back with you in 2 minutes with more information from Fred Kelly Grant. And you're going to meet Sean Curtis in the next segment here on We the People Radio, the home of Free Fire Media.
Poe.
Welcome back. It's okay, Fred, you can laugh.
Welcome back to We the People Radio. Join us on our chat room, or we're streaming live. Go to wethepeopleradio.us. This is pre-recorded, so don't call. But if you do go to wethepeopleradio.us, you will find our media page. All the information about our guest today, Mr. Fred Kelly Grant, as well as archives from previous shows. Everything you need to know right there. And spread the word, folks. Everything we talk about on this show is applicable to anybody, no matter where they live.
Coming to a town near you.
So click on those radio links and email those MP3 files out to everybody you know. Use your internet.
Yeah.
Spread the word.
Yeah, don't make it complicated. And for heaven's sakes, don't become an expert on anything. It's
That's
not
right.
required.
That's right.
So,
if
Mr.
everybody
Grant,
had to go to law school, it would take us forever to beat these.
It
these
would.
Things.
Actually, we don't recommend that necessarily.
No, we die in the
fact, most people that go to law school aren't any real help against the bureaucrats.
Yeah. And if you tuned in before this last break, Fred was giving us some colorful stories about his past in the representing the criminal element.
But tell them about the three kinds of corruption.
Well,
I thought that was interesting.
Carl Llewellyn was one of my favorite professors in law school and at Chicago, and he said there were only three types of big city government, and they all involved graft. The Philadelphia type, where graft got paid and the jobs didn't get done, and New York, where the graft got paid and the jobs got done poorly, and Chicago, the graft got paid and the work got done well.
Okay, now I got to ask a stupid question. What's graft?
Corruption. You pay off to the...
Okay.
To the city planning manager or to the city council and you get the contracts, or to the mayor and you get the contracts. In Mayor Daley in Chicago, the Mayor Daley, who was in office when I was there in law school, had a rule. He was going to have the most governable big city in the nation, and he did. And it was corrupt. But I tell you that if you walked to a bus stop and the bus had just pulled away, 12 minutes and there'd be another one there.
Now, in your
you got what you paid for in that particular thing.
Sure,
yeah.
That's what you got. The people got served.
Okay.
He had a rule. He had two types of employees that he allowed in the city. There were those political appointments that each office was allowed, but they didn't deal with the public. The people who dealt with the public, he insisted, be good public servants. And each day, he would pick up a telephone with an outside line and call one office to see how he got treated by an employee. If he didn't get treated right, he called the supervisor.
Interesting.
Yeah.
He was an interesting guy.
Good management. Hey, so those three types of government from the East Coast, what do you find on the West Coast?
You know, I much prefer the East Coast corruption because it's open and you know it's there.
Yeah.
And I've said often that in the West, you don't know when it's happening to you.
Mm-hmm.
That's the thing that really, I much prefer the open corruption.
Okay.
Because you can see what's going on, you know what's going on, but you see what happens too. There's too much backrooming in the West, and I really can't figure it out. I don't try very hard, but
yeah.
I wonder what causes that. Maybe we just haven't, this area hasn't had people in it as long, so we're not as good at it. We're working up.
I don't think you've perfected it. That's exactly right. I don't think you've perfected
it. We're rookie corruptors.
Well, think of this. Think how much longer the syndicate existed in the East than it has here.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
And people can learn from the syndicate. They are well organized. They remind me much of the federal government and the federal agencies.
Hence, organized crime.
That's it. The decisions are made at the top. The orders come down. And in the syndicate, if you don't follow the orders, you disappear. In the federal agencies, you get transferred. So, no creativity on
either.
Yeah,
I've never heard the term organized government.
No.
It's kind of an oxymoron, actually.
Yeah. Well,
and yet it is. And yet it is from the top. You just don't see it as the people on the ground. But it's well organized, well orchestrated at the top.
So you move from, you were involved with government all that time in a completely different capacity. And you wound up in land use issues
in
Idaho. And I've heard you say many times it's like nobody wanted to go into land use issues. How horrible, what kind of horrible law would that be to practice?
I certainly didn't.
And didn't it all start because of an issue with cattle grazing?
It did. One of my very good friends, who had been a drinking buddy of mine before I had to give it up and realized I was an alcoholic, I always thought you had to be living under a bridge and drinking out of a brown paper bag if you were an alcoholic. Dick and I were good drinking buddies, and after I quit drinking, we still shared a cold drink in the bars. And, he was married to a girl that graduated with me from high school who always dominated me. Anytime she needed me to do something, she just forced me to do it. And Dick came to me and asked for help because he was a rancher, and there were 179 other family ranchers in Owyhee County, way down in the southwestern section of Idaho, 5-million-acre county and only 10,000 people. Livestock grazing was the economy of the county, and the Bureau of Land Management had a draft plan ready to release that would reduce grazing by 40%. And, of course, none of them could survive that. And he asked me if I could help him, and I said probably not, because if the federal government's made up its mind to get you off the land, they won't quit until they do. I even said that day, a line I've used many times, that the federal government's like Frankenstein's monster. It just keeps coming. You stop it once, but it's going to come after you again. And because he meant so much to me, and because I was afraid of his wife, I went to a conference, wasn't convinced. Then I spent some time looking at the statutes, and I found a process that I thought, with my knowledge of the system, that I could use to save them for 2 or 3 years. And I told them that. I said, I can mess this system up for 2 to 3 years, but you better find something else to do to make a living. They're still in business today, and that was 22 years
ago. Yeah, I was going to say, and that's been a while, huh?
Yeah.
So once you kind of scratched the surface, did just a whole plethora of problems appear, or was that a slow process?
Well, it was a slow process because I focused only on the BLM and only on Owyhee County. A couple of years later, Sean Curtis and his good friend Carolyn Carey, both of whom are good friends to me, came up, and I didn't know them before, but they came and asked for assistance in determining what direction their county ought to take. They were facing much the same issue with the Forest Service as we'd faced with the BLM. But actually, even after that, this was only a minor part of my work. I was still doing the death penalty work for the public defender up there. We had a county of 65,000, and they had 11 death penalty cases in like 6 years. I mean, it was just unreal.
Wow. Well, and we should tell people that Sean Curtis is actually here doing what he does every time I see him, not saying anything.
Yeah, microphone number four.
Say hi, Sean.
How are you?
So you've known Fred how long?
20-some years, I guess.
20-some years.
Been sitting at the throne of King Fred and practicing the things that he teaches, yeah.
And Sean, you are from Alturas.
I am.
And is that where you were living when you first contacted Fred?
Pretty much. We had a county supervisor that was handed a 6-pound draft forest plan and that had taken 8 years to develop and said, we'd like your comments back in 30 days, please.
Wow.
And she says there's got to be another way to, a better way for local government to interact with the primary landlord of the county.
Which was the Forest Service.
The federal government in its various forms of the Forest Service, and we have both Forest Service, BLM, and Fish and Wildlife property in the county. And that led us to Fred, and we implemented coordination through the process that we talk about in these classes, and the rest is history.
So, Sean, what part do you play today?
Well, my job in Modoc County is to implement coordination.
Okay. And you, do you work for anyone in particular, or are you a private citizen that has taken on this active role to keep coordination alive in your county?
When we first started, this was all done by volunteers. Both the committee that reviewed federal proposals to give advice to the county board of supervisors. And then at some point, the Board of Supervisors said this is too much for a volunteer group to take on when you consider that there's a lot of reading, a lot of writing, you know, something needs to, you know, the committee is a vital part of that, but somebody needs to condense all this down so that committee time can be spent productively. And so I work for the county doing that now, although okay. at that time it was all volunteer.
And, okay. and for the folks that are not clear on the layout of MoDoc County, you
MoDoc
guys...
MoDoc County, 4,000 square miles in the northeast corner, surrounded on one side by Oregon, one side by Nevada, and the other two sides by Prosperity.
Okay.
And before and you have hardly yeah. any people.
9,500 people.
That's wow. the pivotal thing. And okay. The other thing that's creeping up on you guys up there is a monument. We've done programs on the monument in Siskiyou County, which is a 600,000-acre proposal. And in MoDoc County...
MoDoc County, at least on the MoDoc Plateau, they say it's 3 million acres. I'm not sure we have 3 million acres there for them to actually make a monument out of, but that's what they're talking about.
And basically, a monument, such as it is a land grab by the government. They basically take control of the land, and
if it goes the way it's gone in the
yes.
past.
Well, and they keep human use off.
I think what it is most of that land they already own,
mm-hmm.
and it'll convert from multiple use
right.
to a one use, which is non-people use.
So basically, no more camping, no more Boy Scout troops, no more fishing, no more
grazing, no more.
Yeah. So
that's
basically, it's really rezoning the land to keep human use off.
And it is.
And
you guys, that's a good analogy.
And you guys have been able to work on that using a process called or termed coordination. And when we come back in 2 minutes, we're going to launch into that. And better get a pen and paper while you're getting a coffee refill here. You're listening to We the People Radio on KCNR 1460 AM, the home of Free Fire Media.
You can sit around and wait for the phone to ring. Someone to tell you everything. Sit around and wonder what tomorrow will bring. Maybe a dabbling.
Well, it's all right, even if they say you're wrong. Well, it's all right. Sometimes you gotta be strong.
I hear people talking bad about the way we have to live here in this country. Harping on wars we fight and griping about the way things ought to be. And I don't mind them switching sides and standing up for things they believe in. When they're running down my country, man, they're walking on the fighting side of me.
Okay. And for all those people that are complaining about the way we live here, let me show you the door and let me help you pack. Welcome back to We the People Radio. Join us. KCNR 1460. Go to wethepeopleradio.us. You will hear us streaming live, and you'll have the media page where you can find out everything you need to know about Mr. Fred Kelly-Grant and about this radio show.
And Mr. Sean Curtis.
And we were talking about coordination. And we're kind of leading up to that, and basically that is the coordination of efforts between local governments and federal governments. And Fred?
Yes.
The thing I find most interesting about coordination, and you are the father of coordination, because you discovered, you didn't create coordination, but you discovered that it was something that the federal government put into place, and no one really understood that we could actually use it.
Right.
In our favor. Can
it it had never been used. Senator Packwood put the language, he wrote the amendment that put the language into the Federal Land Policy Management Act in 1976. And it defines a process by which the local government can call to the federal agencies and say, you've got to come to us and you've got to meet with us. You've got to advise us of what you're going to do in advance. You've got to discuss with us whether or not that's inconsistent with our policy and our economy and our culture. And if it is inconsistent, then you've got to make every practicable effort to bring consistency between the two. In other words, you can't run over us anymore. He put that in the committee hearings. The Bureau of Land Management and the Forest Service both appeared and said, Senator, and in letters, we actually have that in the record, they said this will make our job of management much more difficult. And his response was, it should. That's what it's intended to do. Because you're managing the federal lands that have a real impact on local communities and real impact on private property. And you should manage so that you're managing consistent with the sound economies of those local communities. It was passed in 1976. That's what I discovered in 1991, I think it was, when I went out to help the ranchers, and it had never been used. No one had ever, from a local government standpoint, used it.
So you found it and dusted it off.
Yeah, you might say that. And when I did find it, you know, it was one of those things. As I said, I didn't foresee where it would go. I thought that probably I could muck the system up for 2 or 3 years with it, while some court tried to figure out what it meant. The one thing that made me think that that I could get through 2 to 3 years was the fact that last part, the part of consistency, that it wasn't just a matter of sitting down and talking, but it was a matter of the duty on the part of the agency to try to be consistent with what the local government needed and wanted for its people. And that, I thought, might be the hook that would get them for a while.
And I think the reason it's more critical than ever right now is because they do need to recognize the state of the economy.
Well, they do. And the president, in fact, has issued 2 executive orders this year that have been very helpful to us in local government.
Shocking.
Yes.
Oh, did I say that?
And that's the one that people are really... I got a call about that again this morning. The Rural Council.
Rural Council,
yes, yeah. Yes. And people are completely freaked out about that, but there's kind of an upside.
Well, there is an upside, and we use the upside. Anytime you get a tool created, you use it. Quite frankly, when I first saw it and saw that he had created this council to better the life in rural America, and he had appointed all the cabinet members to the council, I figured it was a joke. So I didn't even bother to pay any attention to it.
And most people thought it was a direct result of Agenda 21 or directly tied to it.
That's exactly right. And it could be.
Yeah. Yeah.
But one of the fellows, the Council of Fellows on Trademark America Foundation, emailed me and said, what do you think, how can we use this coordination language in the executive order? And so I dug it out again and read it, and there it is. He required in that executive order, once again, he required all federal agencies to coordinate with local government toward improving the lifestyle and economy in rural America. And he went beyond local government in that executive order and said that they have to coordinate with organizations of citizens.
So who interprets that term, the quality of the lifestyle of rural America?
Well, we're going to.
Okay. we have to be really careful that we don't let them interpret them.
In rural America should probably do that. And Sean, actually, your work in Modoc County is a really good example of this, because I think it was yesterday afternoon or one of these days we've been hanging out, you were saying that you guys were harvesting 0 board feet off the public lands, correct?
Yeah, in the 2001, 2002, and 2003, the Modoc National Forest was producing 0 saw logs. And we give coordination certainly its fair share of credit for ratcheting that up to somewhere between 15 and 20 million board feet per year. At least that's what that we say in the next 5-year program that they have to lay out. And while the county doesn't get all the credit for that, it wouldn't have happened without the county. So it was a joint effort, and that's coordination's supposed to be that. You're supposed to get synergy from having both local and federal governments work together towards, you know, a goal that benefits both sides.
And Sean, in the next 5 years, how do you see that having an economic impact on Modoc County?
Well, if we can't get a sawmill back, we're going to lose part of the benefit of having a
got to haul them.
Yeah, of having a timber program. On the other hand, if Secure Rural Schools goes away, then at least we will have 20 million board feet of timber receipts that can go to roads and schools.
Mm-hmm. That'd be awesome.
And a lot of people don't realize that eliminating the timber industry eliminated tax receipts to the schools, because we always want to put education first. It has to be paid for.
Well, the formula for that the Forest Service uses in essence to pay their property taxes is to share receipts. off the forest with the county in which the forest is located. And for 90 years, that was a self-funded program. They produced primarily timber, but to a certain extent, grazing fees and recreation fees and those sorts of things went to the end of this pot, and 25% came out part to half to roads and half to schools in the counties. And with the cessation of logging, which took place pretty much in the 90s, that was 25% of almost zero.
Jeez.
And so that's, you know, not only is that an important piece of local government's operating money, because that money is one of the few sources of federal money that comes with, I mean, it, you can count on it generally, but when they were producing those logs, you had kids sitting in school seats, which brought money into the schools. You had sales taxes, those sorts of things, and you had an economy that was built around that. And so when you lost the logging, even though the secure rural schools made up the loss to the county treasury, it didn't make up the loss to the local economy.
No, because nobody was working.
Right.
And what we're seeing across the country, I think, and certainly up here in Northern California, is if you stop, you know, dealing with your timber in a productive, responsible way, you just get a lot of big fires.
Yeah, that's the other part of timber management, is the health of the forest or the lack thereof.
And for those that have environmental issues about the timber industry and logging and clear cutting, they have to understand in the state of California, we do have the strictest environmental laws on the planet. So I think that having those concerns is a moot point.
Yeah.
Well,
need to do their homework.
Don't you ever stop to think about the fact that for hundreds of years, loggers logged the forests and ranchers ranched the grazelands and farmers farmed, and yet we kept the land and the forest good enough that the environmentalists then wanted to preserve it?
Yeah, there you go.
It's amazing to me that the concept that even city people have accepted back in the East, that in the West everybody is desecrating the soil and the land.
If they wouldn't have been able to eat off of it and create whole economies around it if they had desecrated it.
And they're really in the East, and particularly in the Congress, I've found there's no real understanding of what goes on out here. And there's even less reason for them to understand. I have a very good friend who's a senator from one of the eastern states. And every time I'm back in the East and I can, I talk with him, and he just is—he's astounded to hear the things that I talk about, because they believe fully that we have clear-cut the forests from one end of the country to the other in the West. They believe that we've overgrazed all of the rangelands, and they believe that the farmers are milking the soil of all the nutrients and replacing nothing.
And as far as the forest lands, I highly recommend Google Earth.
That's right. That's right.
Go look.
See for yourself.
Well, I lived in Humboldt County for a while, and I would see these articles in the papers down in the Bay Area about how they had cut the last redwood down. I was like, how about the ones in my yard? Did they clear cut my yard?
And I didn't know it.
Doubtful. They're, you know, one of the biggest things, and we do this a lot with the Tea Party, and I think that's kind of one of the benefits, is all the education. We spend a lot of time educating people, people who, you know, we did a program here, a month ago on fishing in the Atlantic. And most of us don't know where our fish comes from. But I'll tell you what, I'm reading those labels if I can't get it fresh.
That's right. Mm-hmm. That's right. I did an interview in Siskiyou County this past week, specifically designed for the citizens of the cities and towns up there, to show them why water problems affected them, because they don't know that, they don't see that they do.
Yeah, it feels like it's kind of somebody else's thing.
That's right.
We're gonna come back with all the things that are your problem, actually. We're making them all your problem today. Here on We the People Radio, you're listening to KCNR 1460 AM, the home of free fire media.
if everybody's wrong. Young people speak in their minds, are getting so much resistance from behind. Time we stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going on.
Welcome back to We the People Radio. Go to wethepeopleradio.us to join the chat room, to hear us streaming live, and to find out all about our guests today and all of the archived shows. And I really encourage you to click on those radio links and send them out. And we are with Mr. Fred Kelly Grant and Mr. Sean Curtis from Modoc County. And Modoc County has been a perfect prototype for how the efforts of coordination have worked successfully. And off air, we were talking about how everything that is happening to private property rights, grazing rights, agricultural, produce, fishing, how it really is your problem. It was a really good conversation we were having off air.
Everybody has to pitch in. I mean, it doesn't take everybody to be, you know, super smart about it, but if we all kind of stand together, I think if the water guys realize that the ranchers and the farmers and the timber guys and the people who live, even the people who live in cities, I mean, imagine all those people who live in cities who could never come out where we live, you know, to stay there.
If anyone had at any point restricted water use in San Francisco on the basis that it was affecting the salmon, we would have a completely different position being taken today.
That's true.
From the standpoint of the Endangered Species Act.
Right.
The problem is that people in the cities don't see the impact that these things are having on them. Even in the West, in California, in Siskiyou County this past week, I did a show to advise the people of Wairika, for example, as to why the water problems of those ranchers up there were affecting them. Every dollar that it costs a rancher to the government is a dollar lost in the market. And for every dollar lost, studies show that there are 18 more dollars lost in the community because that dollar has not gone into circulation and just recycled over and over and over again through small business. And folks don't think about that. They think about, first of all, the popular media cannot and will not tell those stories in sound bites. You can't tell them in sound bites. These are stories of human lives. That's one of the things that I, on the song just coming in, when it talked about young people and their voices, that's one of the things, one of the reasons why we're establishing a Council of Youth in Trademark America Foundation, to get young people who are interested in these issues involved in them, because, you know, those of us who have been in this fight for 20 years, we're getting old and tired.
Sure.
And we've got to have people coming behind us who will keep up the fight and keep on that fighting side that Haggard sings about.
And isn't that exactly why you have started Trademark America and why you've got younger family members that are stepping up and becoming an instrumental part in driving Trademark America out there?
That's exactly right. I was president of American Stewards of Liberty, president of Stewards of the Range for years and years, and I love the organization. But I had the opportunity through one of my daughter-in-law's clients to establish a foundation, and I decided to take that opportunity. And the reason is that I was really, two things. What you mentioned is getting the younger generation involved, teaching people who haven't yet realized the impact of what's going on, but also the opportunity to quit defending against actions that the federal agencies are taking and go out on the offensive, taking on projects such as in Siskiyou County that's much broader, much bigger than anything I've ever taken on. Even the Trans-Texas Corridor down there where we defeated that, it was a single issue. In Siskiyou County, we've got every issue known to any rancher, farmer, or small town dweller involved, and we've taken it on. And I've committed to the people up there that if they donate the funds necessary to make this work, we will, in 10 years, bring back the economy of Siskiyou County.
Wonderful.
Yeah, we should make a special note that last night at the Reading Tea Party, just a, you know, random, hey, if you want to pitch in on Trademark America, was like $1,100.
That's exactly
nice.
Right.
Now,
exactly
these are people
right.
who mostly live in Reading and,
right.
and or about Reading, and yet the primary project is going to launch up in Siskiyou County, and yet folks here, because we browbeat them, are inundated with the information about yeah. these issues, and they know that it's coming. I mean, the agencies have said that Siskiyou County, well, let's face it, they've got a ton of area. It's kind of like you, Sean, up in Modoc. You know, a ton of area, low population, and right. Not a lot of money.
In 1980, a representative of the Northwest Coast Water Commission,
oh, yeah.
I think I'm saying that right.
Water Quality Board.
Made the statement that Siskiyou County would become the buffer between California and Oregon wilderness, and that the county would become wilderness. Now, that's where they've headed ever since then. You can't make all of Siskiyou County wilderness without affecting Shasta County. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, the old poet, no man is an island, and mm-hmm. that is so true when you're talking about the interlinking of the economies of Northern California. You can do things in San Francisco and Oakland that don't affect Shasta County, but you cannot do anything in Siskiyou County without affecting Shasta County.
And haven't these state and federal agencies made it very clear that Siskiyou County is their launch pad and their prototype, and if it's successful, that they can take down the private property rights and the economy and drive people off their land that they will now start to spread?
Absolutely. I firmly believe that it's the test case. I think it's the one that they've chosen, for example, to charge farmers and ranchers even to divert their own irrigation water, their water rights that they've held for two generations, three generations, and now to divert it to their fields, to divert it to their stock, they're going to have to pay a permit fee and take out an incidental take permit that admits that they're violating the Endangered Species Act because they're using water to irrigate that might otherwise go into the salmon flow.
And for folks who don't know, incidental take permit basically means that if you kill an endangered species, which would be the coho salmon, which would be a debatable endangered species, actually, for most folks up there. But if you were to kill one, I don't know, just a fine. It's like
it's
thousands of dollars.
It's,
so the permit, people think, makes them safe, but
you can break somebody with it. But it isn't just killing the fish. It's also harming the habitat.
Oh, yeah,
and
right.
So the way they get the incidental take permit on diverting the water is you're harming the habitat of the fish. Well, when you an incidental take permit means we didn't mean to do it, but we admit we did it. Well, when you make that admission,
you already committed the
the offense.
That's by signing the permit.
Right, right.
And just to make it real to people, isn't there a story about a little old lady who had a vegetable garden and wanted to pull water out of her creek that ran on her property?
Yeah.
Does that ring a bell to anybody?
Yeah.
It had to
run over two other parcels, and the way this thing was shaping up, this was like 6 or 8 months ago, she needed both of her neighbors to sign off, and when they did that, I mean, it was going to be huge money to everybody.
So she could water her vegetable garden.
So she could water her vegetable garden, but the big thing was, what it did was it opened up their property to inspection 24/7 by Fish and Game, and freaked out.
And that particular story I haven't heard, but I don't doubt it at all. I know that the food safety bill that got through the Congress, had it not been changed greatly, would have required a permit. The Corps of Engineers could have issued a permit for every kid that sells produce along the stand at their ranch house or their farm.
Well, some kids got busted by the police with a lemonade stand.
Yeah, that's happened more than I've read three different stories in three different towns in America,
exactly,
where they have to. It would cost them.
They need health permits
and resale licenses and all that junk just to sell lemonade.
And that's why I was so excited to start this foundation, because when we take on all of the problems in a county like Siskiyou, if we're successful, and I firmly believe we will be, in 10 years, it's going to be the poster child for the opposite of what the federal and state agencies wanted it to be.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be the poster child for what local government and the people in it can do if they work together, not splitting up and fighting over petty differences, but if they work together toward those goals, and that's what we hope to help people understand.
We are we're going to fire off a list of things that it's trademarkamerica.org is the name of the nonprofit. You can go to the website there. You can donate there. You can read about things there. I would encourage that you click on the shop button, S-H-O-P. It's the very last tab on the far right. And in that list of things that you can get like a T-shirt and different things. But there is a workbook called Coordinating Government to Government, and that workbook is really what most people want to have in their hands because they hear the idea, they're excited about it, but now they want to, what do you do?
And this way they get to read it, and
yep.
That's what I've always encouraged people. Don't take somebody's word for what a statute says. Read it. You know, it's not written.
You guys have done a great job. You've got it all laid out, the National Environmental Policy Act, the federal management. I mean, most people, they're like, you guys rattle off this stuff, you know, NEPA
right.
And CEQA and
that's
FLIPMA.
That's why I try not to use the initials.
FLIPMA, I love that one.
Yeah, I know.
There really, is a FLIPMA.
There's a FLIPMA.
Yeah, there's a FLIPMA.
Yeah, I actually wasn't kidding, although I do that a lot. No, there's a FLIPMA.
Yeah.
And it's acronym heaven.
And they're all in there, and so people can figure that out.
So outside of all of those acronyms, this program is laid out beautifully in
Absolutely.
This book.
It's all about the 10th Amendment. And for the people that are a little weak on the 10th Amendment, Fred?
Sovereignty.
Talk to them about 10th Amendment.
It's the reservation of sovereignty to the states and to the people. Anything not specifically given to the national government was reserved to the states and to the people.
That's freedom, folks.
Mm-hmm. So you guys are going to find that with this coordination strategy, you don't have to have a team of attorneys, which is kind of awesome.
Right.
You can be regular people. And especially if you're regular people that pay attention, you need to be regular people that pay attention, meet fairly often. Sean, how often do you guys meet?
Well, we meet once a month. And you're right, it's regular people. The reason that Fred keeps me around is because he can point to people and say, if they can do it, you can do it.
All right, we'll be right back on We the People Radio. We're here at KCNR, the home of Free Fire Media.
The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Welcome back to We the People Radio. Join us by going to wethepeopleradio.us, jump on the chat room, we're streaming live, go to our media page, you can find out everything about Mr. Fred Kelly Grant and Trademark America and the efforts of coordination. And we are here with, we've got six people in the studio today, that's unusual. Mr. Fred Kelly Grant,
yeah.
And we've got Mr. Sean Curtis from Modoc County, and John, you just jumped in, and you are Mr. Grant's son.
That's correct.
And other Mr. Grant in the room.
Yeah, and so you're stepping up into Trademark America to continue what your father started, correct?
Big shoes to fill, but yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
The best part is it's a family business, and you guys' office is in your old bedroom, right,
that's
John?
That's right. That's right. Yep.
And that's a family business.
Yeah.
I like that. I think
brings
that's cool.
Brings back old memories. Most of them good.
And if you're just joining us on our second hour, basically coordination is bringing federal and state agencies and coordinating with local government to make sure that any land use issues on the part of the state and federal agencies don't affect the local economies or contrast with what the local agencies and local government have planned in their own communities. And this is something that Mr. Grant uncovered when he was solicited for help in Idaho.
On a ranching issue.
I
always think it's a little bit of a misnomer when we say they coordinate with local government, because then people think has to be city council, has to be board of supervisors.
Right.
But it doesn't exactly. It could be some other folks, right?
It could be a school district. It can be an irrigation district, a natural resource conservation district, the smallest of towns. Any portion of government that's called local government in any state has the authority, and the agencies have the duty to respond to them and to coordinate with
and
them.
And
that means reach consistency with them.
And does that include Native American tribal councils?
It does. The tribal councils have an even higher level, and that's called consultation. And it's a constitutional right that they have. The federal agencies under the Constitution are obligated to consult with the tribes over every issue. But once again, the obligation is there, but the tribes have to make it happen. You see, the mandate of coordination is firm. It says they shall. So the federal agency should have been coming to local governments forever, saying, hey, look, here's what we're supposed to do with you folks. But they don't. You have to press them, and you have to make them come. And the first moment you ease up, they will quit.
I've got to ask the elephant in the room question. How many state and federal agencies even know that coordination is in their books?
They all know.
They do.
They all know. Now, that doesn't mean that all the employees of each one knows, but at the top, all the agencies know that it's there. As a matter of fact, the Forest Service, which for a long, many months pretended they didn't know what we were talking about, the whole process has been laid out in their planning rules since 1982.
So it's up to the local folks to bring it to their attention.
It is.
Because they're not going to offer it up.
They are not going to offer it up. They will not. And the only people who knew about it as long as the federal agencies have are the environmental groups. They knew about it and kept it a very, very close secret. Now, one of the things that worries me is that, and that's one of the reasons, again, that I want to talk about as to why I wanted the foundation to start. One of the things that worries me is that as we become more successful, there will be pressure brought on the Congress to change that language of those statutes. And I want to elevate that because it is based on the 10th Amendment. It is, in fact, the power of the people under the 10th Amendment that makes this, that's the rock base for coordination. The foundation emphasizes the 10th Amendment so that if somebody somewhere down the line gets that language changed in the statutes, the process is not going to change.
Now, within Trademark America, do you have people that are specifically keeping an eye on all the legislative issues?
We do. We will have. The way Trademark America is set up, the way we established it, is first of all, the board of directors, and Sean's on the board, John's on the board, I'm on the board, Stacy's the president. We have some dedicated people on that board of directors, people who have worked at this for years and believe in it. We have a council of fellows then who are people, again, who have worked on these things for a long, long time and fully believe in it. And it will be their job to kind of oversee the areas in which we need to issue position papers. One of the things that's happened over the years is that we have scientists, range management scientists, forest scientists, hydrologists, biologists, who have written papers that would be very helpful, but they never get published. Well, we want to publish those. We want to get them so that everybody in this fight will know all of the science that's out there. The Council of Fellows then is backed up by what we call the Institute. The Institute will be people, again, who have experience, and they'll be the people who help us research and help us write these position papers. One of the other things that we're going to do is begin a law review or a law journal, and hopefully we probably will start it electronically. One of the things that when a district judge, state or federal, decides to make a decision that is precedent-breaking, one that we would want made, he's going to look to the scholars because he doesn't want his associates on the bench to think that he took a flyer. He wants to find a scholar that says this is the way to go. Well, you can go out and I can lead you to 87 law reviews and journals, and not one of them is focused on private property rights and on local government and the concepts that we're talking about. And I want one. I want one so that judges and lawyers can go to that and see what really the foundations of our law is.
And that way they can verify for themselves.
That's right.
That they've got some backing and they're standing on solid ground.
Exactly.
That seems amazing. I mean, we've been a country for all this time, and Well, private property rights have just been like rolling along. It's no wonder we're losing them.
But Aaron, the problem is that real people haven't worried about it. We've all wanted to. The people in the West and in the South, where I was born, they want to do their work, do their thing, worship their God,
raise their families,
raise
do their volunteer work
and
in their communities.
Have people leave them alone. Have the government leave them alone.
Yeah.
Well, the people on the other side, the people who wanted control of our land and water, they haven't rested. They've been working. They've been using the statutes. They got into court and they got decisions made that colored the entire National Environmental Policy Act. I'll tell you that when we started to use that in Texas, when I saw it as our only way to stop the Trans-Texas Corridor, and I began to really read that act and read the regulations behind it, it is not for the natural environment. It's
for
the human.
I was reading it this morning in your workbook, and
exactly.
I'm like, wait a minute, I always thought this was like the handmaiden of the evildoers. It's
That's
like,
right.
Wait a minute, this NEPA thing, this is actually pro-people.
Absolutely, and that's what we used to win in Texas, to stop the Trans-Texas Corridor. It says it concentrates and focuses on the human environment, and it says that the purpose of it is to make the natural environment harmonize with the human. The human environment is put at the top all the way through the act. And then when you look at the Council on Environmental Quality's regulations, they're the ones that implement NEPA, and they make it very clear that one of the things that is very important and the agencies have to take into consideration is our culture, our local culture, our religion, our educational, our traditions. And that was lost through all the years of court decisions. It's time we turn those things around.
Right.
Oh, yeah. As I was looking through this, I mean, pay special attention, here's the part, to declare a national policy which will encourage productive and enjoyable harmony between man and his environment, to promote efforts which will prevent or eliminate damage to the environment and the biosphere and stimulate the health and welfare of man, not fish, to enrich the understanding of the ecological systems and the natural resources important to the nation. I'm thinking, well, that kind of got lost.
And what was
I guess we screwed up and forgot that part.
And what was one of those first words you read? Production. Productive.
Mm-hmm.
Productive.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Productive and using
right.
it, and
That's
it's
right.
kind of about the people. So kind of interesting how that works. We're going to come
That's
back
right.
in 2 minutes with our full room of guests here. Join us back on We the People. You're listening to KCNR 1460 AM, the home of Free Fire Media.
Is in a bank in the middle of Beverly Hills, in somebody else's name. So if you're dreaming about California.
Okay, folks, that's why Aaron and I have day jobs.
That was fun, though.
We wanted to bring you in nicely.
We tried to lure the men in, but they wouldn't go.
They're shy.
I had a very politically incorrect line to put in there.
I know. If you're dreaming about California, it's like, keep dreaming because... Yeah, okay.
Well, no,
sorry.
It was about the gold. And,
And
I would have put in Oakland and San Francisco.
Oh, there you go.
That would probably be a better deal because... Well, the corruption there isn't. We didn't line out the corruption. The Beverly Hills thing is a huge problem.
Now,
but
if you're
isn't
just
that where Soros lives, I mean, isn't that where he hangs out most of the time?
Now, if you're just tuning in and you're wondering what the heck you've just tuned into,
we forgot about that. Sorry,
we are We the People Radio, and you can join us on our chat room or listen to us streaming live at wethepeopleradio.us. Tells you all about our show today and the bio on Mr. Fred Kelly Grant.
His son John and Sean Curtis,
all of whom are very involved in the new foundation, Trademark America. It's all about the Tenth Amendment, all about private property rights, all about how the destruction of those rights will impact everyone, whether you live in the cities or in the rural counties. Really important to listen up.
Exactly. But we're taping this show early, so it's afternoon, and, you know, everybody's feeling kind of silly. So, you know, for all the people that are going, wow, they're kind of perky for Sunday morning.
It's not Sunday morning.
Yeah, we faked out.
We were talking about, what were we talking about when we went out on break?
Who knows?
We were talking about the environmentalists, the human environment being
NEPA.
The focus in NEPA, and which is the National Environmental Policy Act.
There you go.
I always liked it. I try to stay away from those initials because I hate bureaucracy.
But NEPA is easy. See, you hear it a few times, and you go to the meetings, you feel kind of smart. So
it is. But I, you know, one of the things is people will use shorthand terms with me. This morning I heard AB 34 or whatever it was, and I had to ask, what is it? I just don't remember things that way. I like to remember them by the name.
Yeah.
But see, we don't AB 32, the global warming legislation.
That's the one.
Yeah, we don't. I don't even know what we call it. We call them something ridiculous. It's some big long thing, and so everybody just goes, "Oh yeah, AB 32."
Mm-hmm. Well, I have some very politically incorrect names that I give to some of the statutes.
Please share.
We like
well,
it.
Well, some of them I really can't. I think the FCC still does have some regulations. I know they're not as strong as they used
Bob's
to be.
Bob's reaching for the button.
Yes.
Yeah, Bob's ready.
That's right.
Bob wanted to make sure that it was arm's length.
Right. Right. But you know, the one like the food safety bill, that is the most remarkable thing. I think that's one of the reasons why I really decided years ago that the only way we're going to make anything happen in this country is at local government level. Harry Reid, in the last session of the Congress, in fact, John will remember this, that I had him on standby. He was watching every move that Reid made on C-SPAN. The man took, let's just use it as an example. Let's say that Senate Bill number 1 was to pave a road in Louisiana, and Senate Bill number 2 was the food safety bill. Now, everybody was alerted to Senate Bill 2. Emails had come in and faxes had come in, don't let Senate Bill 2 pass. Standing on the floor of the Senate all by himself was Senator Reid and the presiding officer, and he said, I ask unanimous consent to amend Senate Bill 1 without objection. Well, there was none. So he moved to amend Senate Bill 1 by striking the contents and replacing it with the contents of Senate Bill 2. And without objection, because there was no one on the floor, it passed. Now, all of a sudden, on the vote for the next day was Senate Bill 1, which was now the food safety bill, but nobody in the public knew it. And so consequently, when the next day, without objection, it passed and became law. My question to some of the senators that I work with is, why in the world would you leave Harry Reid alone in the last hours of a Senate session so that he can do these things without objection? And the answer was, well, he slipped one past us.
Wow.
And so at that point, we were watching very carefully to be sure that he didn't slip in the Clean Water Restoration Act, which would have put every body of water and every piece of land that adjoins, is near, affects, or is affected by water under the control of the Corps of Engineers.
Oh, boy.
I watched that one.
That's big.
Yep. Yeah, I was watching that one. It's like, are they really going to do that?
Well, and
they would have liked it.
And except for the fact that he took the food safety bill first and got it passed. And who's going to object to food safety until you read it? They're very clever in the name, smart growth.
We've learned if it says smart or safe or sustainable, just say no.
Right.
If it sounds good, it's bad.
That's why I got deceived on the executive order on the Rural Council.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was another sustainable.
Yeah, and at first glance, I thought the same thing, especially coming from this particular administration.
And it may be that that's what it was intended for, but we're going to use it for all we can because of the language that he put in there.
Yeah,
that's amazing. So for people that are out there that haven't met all you guys and are kind of new to this idea, what would be their first step if they have something going on in their area that they would like to use this process for? What's the first thing you'd tell them to do?
As a citizen or a group of citizens, for
example? Like, how would they interact with the foundation?
Well, the foundation, they would get on our website, and it's www.trademarkamerica.org. See, I don't get on it, so it's tough.
Like, you don't call yourself either.
Right, that's right. But they get on the website, and there are contact points there where they can contact us, and the email addresses are very simple. It's John, J-O-N, at trademarkamerica.org, Stacy, S-T-A-C-I, at trademarkamerica.org, Rachel at trademarkamerica.org. They're very, very simple
Great.
Emails.
Great.
And once they get there, Then there are places where they can send us questions, they can send us issues for us to try to help them with and give them some guidance. And the chances are, I forgot one of the things that is actually probably the most important part of the foundation. I intend to have, within the next couple of months, about a 4 or 5 day intensive training period where we're going to pull people in and train them in the strategy of how to make this process work. The process itself is laid out for you, but it's all about strategy. It's like a football game. You can have your X's and O's on the board, but you better know mm-hmm. how to develop and change the strategy as the game progresses. John and I have watched football for years, and we hate to see our favorite team go into the prevent defense because all it prevents is winning. And you've got to change strategy as these things come along. That's what I want to train. I want to train the people to survive me, to succeed me. Sean is one of those who will probably even help with the training because he's been at it a long time. And we want to have people in each area who can help the people around them make these things happen. And that the foundation is there as long as it's funded and sustained, and I won't use sustainable, and sustained, and sustained, then we will always
poised
have people.
Poised for the future.
I like that. Then we've got people who can continue this
process. So it's duplicating it over and over again.
That's exactly right. Yeah, and that's our goal.
Teaching everybody to fish.
So it can be as basic as they're having some sort of problem. So a group of citizens pull together. They figure out who they're going to work with. Maybe it's their sheriff.
Right.
Maybe it's their city council. Maybe it's
their school board.
Their
fire district.
They kind of figure out who to work with, and then through the foundation, you guys can help them figure out a little bit of a battle plan there. On how to go make that happen.
That's right. And the sheriffs are very, very important. And finally, our sheriffs are beginning to realize that. We have a good number of sheriffs coming to Grants Pass, Oregon on Friday. I have a whole workshop prepared for them to tell them the parameters of their authority. But the statutes say that federal agencies must coordinate with local government and elected officials. So the sheriff stands alone. He doesn't need anyone else in the county to exercise his authority for coordination. Now, what does that mean? Does it mean only law enforcement? No, of course not, because he has to have funds in order to provide public safety and to provide for the public health. So anything that affects the economy of his county, that affects the general fund, he has the right to require the agency to negotiate that with him.
Now, very quickly, before we go to break, what are some common examples of issues that are coming up in communities where they may need coordination efforts?
For example, in Siskiyou County, the one I mentioned about the farmers and ranchers being required to pay just to divert their water.
Their own water.
That's one issue. John,
what are some things that came up in Modoc County?
Well, they're as broad as the spectrum that exists. We've coordinated on dam relicensing, revision of the BLM resource management plans and the forest land management plan, timber harvest, endangered species, local plans. There's just about anything. Our next project's not particularly applicable to a lot of folks, but wild horse gathers are one of our next major projects.
So are most issues that come up that would require coordination involving land use?
Well, land or water use, but John has some interesting clients right now involving a school district in Colorado where they're striving to prevent the military from greatly expanding a military base when it's not necessary, when Congress has said not to do it, and they're trying to do it anyway and take property from the school district.
Really? Oh, that's interesting.
So sometimes it's eminent domain.
Exactly.
Basically, any time that regular people in the course of living their life keep butting heads with some governmental entity that won't allow them to
what
they're doing.
That's right. John's other client is Benoit County. You might tell him about that one, John.
All right, we're going to take a quick break here, but when we come back, because that is a good one. and the power company that goes with it. There are lots of issues out there. I'm sure whatever community you're in, you have many of them. Need to get on the trademarkamerica.org website, read some of the things in there, and see how that applies to you. You are listening to We the People Radio here on KCNR 1460 AM, the home of Free Fire Media.
Home of the free, yeah. Little big houses for you and me.
Got a wife, got some kids, man, I love those barbecue ribs. Worked real hard to earn this steak, now it's time for us to play. How come you, how can loving be so?
That is our own Mike Smith, a great patriot from Corning, California. If you're interested in his music, go to patriotmusic.com. I actually have his CD. It's got about a dozen songs on it. Excellent road music. I highly recommend it. His lyrics are fabulous. So you are tuning in to the last segment, I'd say the last half hour, 45 minutes of We the People Radio. Not too late to chime in. Go to wethepeopleradio.us. Jump on the chat room. We're streaming live. Go to our media page and find out all about Trademark America, all the links that we talk about. Everything you need to know is there and easy to pass on to friends and family.
Absolutely. So we're working on the process of, I don't know, I guess coordination is always a process, huh? It's never done.
No, that's what it is. A lot of people say coordination as though it's a magic carpet.
Yeah, you invoke it. Like they always say, you would have to invoke coordination. It's almost like if you read the spell properly, they'll disappear.
Exactly.
Yeah, it doesn't really work like that.
It's a process. Like, let's walk to the park. The process of walking is what you do. It's how you walk, and that's where it is made or broken is how you do it. The strategy of how you make it work.
Talk to me about this one piece of the puzzle that we've heard and seen. But everybody runs out of, equipment. We've had some supervisors, boards of supervisor members, and different public officials who say, well, we're handling that.
Right.
Like, you citizens don't fret about that. And we're like, no, Fred said it needs the community, but we don't really know why. What do we say on that?
It needs the community because the agencies, you have to understand agency personnel. You have to have worked with them and for them and against them. And when you do, you understand the nature of an agency. And an agency is going to test the elected officials. And if they walk into a room that is filled with citizens, whether it's the advisory committee or whether it's the public sitting in that meeting room, there's an altogether different atmosphere than when the supervisors say, we've handled that. There's nothing that scares me more than to hear any elected official say, we've handled that. Because when you say you've handled something, the Forest Service, you've never handled. You may think that you have solved a problem, but you don't ever solve the problem. It is a continuing problem. I'm an alcoholic, a recovering alcoholic. I'm never cured. Every single day, I have to make sure that I go through that day. It's the same with this process. You cannot say, we took care of that and write it off the table. You got to take care of it every single day because, like Frankenstein's monster, that agency is going to keep coming after you. Anybody who says, don't worry, we've handled that, does not understand the process of the federal government and how it begins and succeeds in taking our liberty.
So, let's do two scenarios. On the one hand, maybe we're coordinating, because it's the thing people are most familiar with, is keeping the roads and the forest open. So if you have an elected official who, say, goes with a planning director or somebody like that, and then they meet with the Forest Service all by themselves, we know that that's substantially different than how this process would normally work. Talk to me about public meeting laws. Do they come into effect on that?
They do. A coordination meeting, under the process, a meeting is government to government. That's what makes it important. Mm-hmm. That's why the federal government has to honor this demand, because they're not meeting just with the public. There's a difference between the general public and local government, and the statutes make that clear. Government-to-government meetings is where the agency has to be consistent. Doesn't have to be if it's meeting with a supervisor or with a public works director. They don't have to do anything. But when they're meeting government-to-government, they have to then follow the process and follow the rules. And that government-to-government meeting has to be a public meeting under the laws of any of the 50 states. A public meeting, not necessarily where there's public input, but the public is entitled to come and see and hear what goes on at that meeting. And in most of the counties with which I work, what the supervisors say at the beginning is, this is a public meeting, you're welcome to be here. If you have any comments about what you hear here, we'll make time available at our next regular meeting for you to make those comments. That way the agency understands, and you don't diminish the credibility then of the governing body of the county or of the city. The agency is there dealing with the sovereign government of that county, of that city, of that town. And if you have a supervisor and an employee who go out to see the forest at their headquarters or so on, that's not coordination. That's what the Forest Service has tried to get people to do for years and years and years, and the BLM.
So let's say they do go. Let's say they go, and the forest supervisor or the supervisor's supervisor says, oh, you know what, no, we're going to work with you. It's going to be great. It's going to be fantastic. We've got it handled. And they kind of make, they have kind of an agreement like that. The forest isn't bound to that, right?
Of course not. Any forest supervisor who has a brain at all will say that. As a matter of fact, any forest supervisor with a brain will coordinate, too, because that's what the law requires them to do. But there are a lot who resist because they're arrogant. They've taken the position that they own the forests, or in the BLM, they own the rangelands. So they don't own anything.
It's public land.
The people own them. But no, they're under the laws of this country. The U.S. Supreme Court has made it clear time and time again that no matter what a federal employee says to you, the United States government is not bound to it. The only time the United States government is bound to anything is with regard to these issues is when the agency makes an agreement in a government-to-government meeting with the governing board.
With the
public in attendance.
Sure, you declare a public meeting, you give proper notice, you allow the public to come, there are minutes kept.
Right.
That all becomes part of the official record of the governing body.
And this is falling under the Brown Act.
That's in California, yes. Yeah. And in Idaho, it's the public records law.
Okay.
I mean, there's one in all 50 states that has to be protected.
Now, we were touching a little bit on...
Sean has a thought on this. Yes, I saw him swivel in his microphone.
As hard as it is to believe for some of us, occasionally Congress actually got something right. And they were very clear in the way they laid things out. There's separate processes for the agencies to deal with the general public. And those are described somewhere in the law and in the regulations that the agencies produce. And there's a separate process for dealing with local government. And the agencies are very good at taking all the C words and mixing them up and trying to get you to believe that they all mean the same thing.
Like
coordination, consultation, communication.
Compromise.
And don't forget cooperation.
Oh, cooperation.
Exactly.
That's the one they use all the time.
And Congress used some of those terms separately in the same, you know, within a few lines in a law. So you know that they mean something different because they use them differently. But the agencies would like you to believe that they all mean the same thing.
Now, when I lay this process out for you as to government to government, there's a local official in California that delights in telling people, well, there are other ways to coordinate other than Fred Kelly Grant's way. Well, it's not my way. Congress enacted the law. It's the law. It's the legal way. You either do it the legal way or you do it the way that's ineffective.
So, and what was the other choice again?
Well, The other choice is the other choice is that you do it the legal way, or you do it in an ineffective way, a way that doesn't bind the agency.
Oh.
And for people to say that's there are other ways to do it other than the Fred Kelly Grant way. In other words, the director and I can go out and talk to the forest and make a deal. You know, that's not my way.
Then we all wake up one day and they go, what meeting?
And that's why Congress passed the law the way they did.
Sure.
Is so that the people will be present and hear exactly what's coming.
So basically, you've just taken the law and
used
and created a roadmap for everyday people who may not otherwise know how to implement coordination.
That's exactly
right. You've just armed the American public.
Well, sure, and it's not. I mean, Sean, you're not a lawyer, right? Do you play one on TV? Let's cover our bases here.
In fact, I'm the only lawyer in the whole crowd. John is a mediator.
John's too quiet.
Mediator.
He can't be a lawyer. He's too quiet.
Well, that's one of the things that is important for folks to know is that even though Fred is a resource that counties can call upon, we have operated coordination in Modoc County without a county council in-house for 15 years. You don't need a lawyer to make it work. All this is really...
If you do it correctly.
If you do it correctly. Well, maybe you don't even... You probably don't need a lawyer to do it incorrectly either. But all this does is allows local government to represent their individual constituents in a forum that the individuals don't have available to them.
In Siskiyou County, this entire week that I worked up there, there wasn't one lawyer among the group that put together a plan that will amaze you once you see it, and it'll be out by the end of the week, of the things that we're heading at. One is to retain the dams, because we're going to be able to show through the science that we already have that the comment is that we're going to take the dams out in order to save the fish.
Yeah.
We can show that in the Rogue River, where the dams came out, the fish died. The heavy metals that came from the silt behind the dams killed the fish. So the retain the dams, and we're starting to call it what it really is, destruction of the dams. It's not removal. It's destruction.
Well, it's just like the forest roads. When they talk about decommissioning, that's not putting up a gate. That's literally going in and physically destroying the roads.
That's exactly right.
So that they can't be traveled.
That's exactly right. And one of the interesting things about the forest is when they say recommissioning a road, or I think that's the term, recommissioning a road, which means destroying it. It's amazing how government brains sit down and come up with these words to deceive the public.
I went to college to be an English teacher. See, this is a misuse of everything I hold dear. This is all wrong. We're going to come back with some more stuff that's probably all wrong, too. Here we're speaking with Fred Kelly Grant from TrademarkAmerica.org and John and Sean and Elizabeth. Here on We the People Radio at KCNR 1460 AM, the home of Free Fire Media.
Gotta make a stand. The stewards of this land are mom and pop. The government couldn't run a soda shop. I said freedom.
That's Mike Smith, PatriotMusic.com.
If the government ran a soda shop, it would be out of business.
Welcome back to We the People.
I knew you'd like that one.
Matt, welcome back to the politically incorrect We the People talk radio. WeThePeopleRadio.us. That's where you will join the chat room, hear us streaming live, and attach yourself to our media page and find out all things Mr. Fred Kelly Grant, coordination, and previous shows that are archived and very easy to send out via email to friends and family, because these issues will get everyone eventually. So we wanted to talk a little bit to John in our last segment. John is the upcoming generation in Trademark America, and we were talking about different types of issues in local communities that would require the the legal coordination efforts between state and federal agencies and local folks and communities, and you've got a really good example of something bad.
I do. One of the things I was going to say also, though, about the citizens being involved is there's nobody in these counties and towns that know better the problems and the issues in those areas than the citizens. So they do have to be involved.
And why is that? Is that because they directly affect
them? Because they live there.
Yeah.
They live there.
Yeah, it's killing their job or costing them money.
Yeah,
or,
and they go to the grocery store every day, and everything that affects them, they know way better than any elected official does.
So sure.
They have to be involved. But the one that Dad was talking about earlier was Benoit County.
Idaho?
Yes.
Okay.
That we work on. And there the issue is Bonneville Power Company. Bonneville Power Administration is buying up parcels of land, putting conservation easements on them, and then gifting them to the tribes, and they're losing tax base from the county. They don't have to pay their taxes on the land anymore. And we're in the middle of not just coordinating the stop of that to where it won't happen again, but also getting the tax base repaid that they've lost out on.
Yeah, because why would they do that? Are they just really nice? They just really like the tribes, or what's
up
with
that? Dad has his own his own take on
they
that.
They still feel bad?
No, it's salmon mitigation. The big dam went in and it took away the water from the salmon, and so the law requires them to mitigate that by buying up land to restore it to salmon habitat.
Okay. Mm.
And the sad thing is, even though it's been brought to their attention time and time again that what they're doing is causing the taxes to not have to get paid, they don't have any reasoning as to why they continue to do it.
Right.
So what are you doing to establish the coordination efforts? And how has that gone? And how long has it been going on?
All together or just me?
All together.
How long has it been going, Dan?
Well, Benoit County, 22 years, but Benoit
Holy
County,
cow.
We started, what, a year and a half ago?
About.
I think, about that.
Okay, and how's it going?
Good. We have our second meeting coming up August, I believe, 18th with Bonneville Power.
Now, which communities, which citizens, which coalitions, which groups in the community did you pull together and get involved in this?
I don't know all of them.
Okay.
Dan.
It was the commissioners themselves up there had heard about this, and there were three or four citizens that had been to our workshops, and they got the commissioners to come. And once the commissioners came and heard it, they decided things aren't going very well for us now. We might as well try it, which is one of the lines I use when people say, well, we don't know whether it'll work or not. And I say, how are things going for you now?
There you go.
If you're not going to try something new, then don't complain about what's happening to you at this point.
Now, commissioners are similar to supervisors or city councilors?
They are. In Idaho, they're called commissioners. In Montana, they're called commissioners. So it varies depending mm-hmm. on mm-hmm. the state you're in. If you think sometimes that five supervisors are bad, in Missouri, some of the counties have 27 commissioners.
Wow.
What?
Yes.
In one county?
In Winton County. Wisconsin, one of my friends was on the board in the county in Wisconsin that had 19.
How many people do they cover? Do they just have a huge area? Or?
No, it's the same.
They each have five citizens that they represent?
It would be, for example, the county that he was on the board with 19 people was probably, 65,000 people.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, yeah. I asked him, I said, how do you ever get anything done? And he said, well, we use subcommittees a lot.
Oh, yeah.
Because I can't fathom it. Fortunately, we don't have to deal so far with any counties.
One elected representative for every neighborhood.
Yeah. Wow.
So basically, then those commissioners realized that they were losing their tax base, and their attempts to communicate with it is a state or federal agency.
It's a hybrid. It's a federal agency, but it's a non-regulatory agency.
Oh yeah.
Which is the reason they said, well, we don't have to coordinate. And through letters that John and I composed, we used the president's executive order that he issued in January, which applies to all agencies, even the non-regulatory, and it was on the basis of that executive order that they finally agreed they had to come and coordinate with the county.
So for all those people think executive orders are all bad?
Look at them. Look at the language.
Not necessarily. Do executive orders ever sunset?
No, not in and of themselves.
Okay.
So they have to be rescinded unless the terms of it say that they'll sunset.
Okay.
But these two executive orders will go on. The main executive order on coordination on federalism was issued by President Clinton. And I'm sure he didn't realize what he was doing at the time. But he did it, and it stays, and it's current, and it mm-hmm. continues on.
So once you applied legal coordination efforts, or presented it that way, then you're finding that this hybrid of agencies is starting to relent a little bit, or at least opening themselves up to communication?
Well, if nothing else, at that time it stops until there's some sort of consistency.
They have to stop.
Correct. Until there's some sort of consistency. That's
good.
What Dad says. The greatest thing about it is at least it stops what's happening at that time.
Okay. And so they're buying up private land. Are they using eminent domain,
yeah.
or is this?
No,
are they just offering?
No, they offer so much money. They're not bound by the market price.
Sure,
they're not bound by appraisals. They go in and offer so much money that actually you can't.
Which
you
is
can't
taxpayer
blame.
Money, by the way.
Well, it is, but you can't blame the rancher because he's getting offered maybe 35% higher than what his land appraises at.
Hmm. Yeah, so, taxpayers' money is nothing but a blank check.
Oh.
Well, this is kind of like, killing the goose that laid the golden egg, because private property, in this case, ranch property or farm property, that's the basis of all wealth in the county. And when it not only goes off the tax rolls, but it ceases to produce. And that's mm-hmm. even more important in a lot of right. cases than the taxes. And so that's something that is germane to almost any jurisdiction anywhere is keeping private property on the tax rolls. And we have a process in Modoc County, particularly with the Bureau of Land Management, where when they acquire an acre for some reason, they release an acre. And so,
their footprint will never get any greater than it is now.
That's it's worked for 20 years.
But the only reason is because Modoc County forces it. That isn't done
right.
in other places.
Exactly. And land acquisitions in one form or another take place all the time. And one of the things that we've had to grapple with that we've been somewhat successful with is often they go through a third party before they come back to the government. There's a non-government agency, a trust or something that mm-hmm. acquires the property, and then it transfers to the government at some point. And it's when it transfers to the government that coordination
can have
a role. And we've stopped some pretty substantial land acquisitions in the county using coordination.
Wow.
And we've forced some acquisitions to go elsewhere. Sorry, Lassen County.
One of the things that you find in this mitigation effort is, for example, that's John and I are headed for Del Norte. Well, not tonight, Sunday night, but the night we're doing this to help them with some issues up there, because when you mitigate, when the state of California requires that if you're going to develop something and you're going to do away with 2 acres of wetlands, they'll say that you have to give, let's say, 20 acres of other land. To mitigate for the loss of the two. But when you give those 20 acres, they may not count it as 20 acres, because once you've given it, then there are quality points that this state agency applies, and you might give 20 acres, but they decide to only count it as 3. And Bonneville Power Administration was doing the same. They might buy, let's say, 80,000-acre ranch, but that didn't all count as 80,000 acres for mitigation. They might decide that only 10,000 of it applied, which meant they'd have to go out and buy another private ranch.
Oh, nice.
Oh, it's remarkable. It's remarkable.
Remarkable. That's a wonderful word to use.
You know what,
stretching the boundaries a little bit there.
It reminds me sometimes of the old 8-track tapes. Somebody once said that whoever created that had to have gone mad. And watching the government work sometimes reminds me mm-hmm. of those 8-track tapes.
It's their logic is just, well, non-existent.
Wow. Okay, so in the final couple of minutes, what do you guys have for people? What would you tell them? Okay, pitch in with trademarkamerica.org.
And trainings. Yep. And trainings
get
available.
Smart.
I think what I would say is what Sir William Gladstone, the Prime Minister of England, said centuries ago, the price of liberty is eternal vigilance. And you've got to stay vigilant all the time, and we'll help you do that at Trademark America.
You guys are going to have blogs and all sorts of good stuff, right, for people to interact and learn, and they don't have to necessarily be part of an official coordination committee to follow along with what's happening.
That's exactly right.
On the issues, correct?
That's exactly right.
And if there's just a single citizen in a community somewhere that is really concerned about an issue, they can contact somebody at Trademark America.
Absolutely.
And you'll take them by the hand and start them down the right road.
You'd be amazed how many counties we've gotten on board because one citizen had a problem.
Oh, that's wonderful.
And it started there, and then it grows and grows until they're on board.
Yeah, and if you're not going to do it for yourself, do it for your kids and grandkids.
Right.
Absolutely. Well, this is one of those things. We have a lot of shows, and we talk about different things that are a problem, and, you know, people are usually writing in on the chat. They're probably, I mean, you know, when we time travel forward to Sunday, you know, they're all writing in, what can we do, what
right.
can we do? Well, this program's all about what you can do.
Right.
Bottom line. But it isn't going to happen. You, as a wise man told me once, you can't sit down and slide uphill.
That's right.
So if you're not willing to do the work, it isn't going to happen. You guys don't have an endless supply of money or staff.
That's right.
It's going to require people to suck it up and get the job done.
And we do want to thank the three of you for being here.
It's been my pleasure.
And for everything that you do.
Thank you for having us.
We love having you guys as our captives over here.
Yeah.
That's great.
And,
it's great to be
I don't
captives.
Know that there have been many times we've had six people in this small studio.
No, it's kind of fun.
Yeah, it's really cozy. Great. Really
but,
great.
We really appreciate all your help, and we hope you'll call on us to get the word out. And we have a lot of people who would like to help, actually. They're very interested in the issues.
And we want their help.
Yeah.
There isn't anybody who offers help himself we don't want.
That's fantastic.
Wonderful. Thanks again.
Thanks, guys. You listen to another episode of We the People. You can catch us online at wethepeople.us and forward that archive to your friends. This is KCNR 1460 AM, the home of Free Fire Media.
Progress came and took its toll.
Thank you for listening to KCNR 1460 AM, the home of Free Fire Media. This is KCNR, Shasta, Redding.